This edition of the Ridley Report is brought to you by LRN.FM. Feds don't want you to hear them.
Okay, I am recording now, if that's alright.
Absolutely. Are you into board games?
Board games or war games?
Board. Some of which are war games, I suppose.
Well, I was a huge fan of Tactics 2, and I actually invented my own board, or I know I made my own boards and maps and stuff like that. But, you know, when computers came along, it just sucked all the air out of that room.
Well, I feel like they've kind of come back lately. Have you ever gone to that Boards and Brews? And I think it's in Manchester? Or is it in Concord?
No, I haven't.
It's like a board game themed cafe, essentially, where it's, you know, a bunch of board game enthusiasts get together to play whatever. And, I mean, you know, like, I haven't gone since the surges in the coronavirus numbers locally, but when I was going, it was, it was just full of people, and they're all playing all these offbeat games that you rarely hear about. And I actually have also made up a board game. What was yours like?
I called mine Tactics 3. I just added an Air Force and did some other things. But Tactics 2 is a little bit like Civilization, except it was a board game, and it was more military. And then I added an Air Force and a Navy and made some new maps, you know, by hand. But then like I said, that was around 1989, and within 2 or 3 years, I had my first computer. So I didn't find much interest in board games anymore once the computers came along.
I definitely get that. I would probably, you know, I'm not that savvy with like, you know, programming or anything, or I might have pursued my board game along that route. I had a hard enough time like creating the appropriate physical board, you know, like designing that online and then printing it out. That was like a big enough technical challenge for me.
Were you trying to market it to, and what was it like?
Yeah, I guess I'm still in the process. It was like it's called Battle of the Gods.
Okay.
And so the idea is that every player controls their own pantheon of, like, mythic gods. So one player is in charge of the Greek pantheon, another player is in charge of, you know, say, like, the Norse pantheon. And so, you know, like, if you're playing Norse and I'm playing Greek, you know, my Zeus might battle your Thor, and you're, you know, it is a tactical game in that you have a, like a village spawning mortals, and those mortals have to go and occupy temples, which allows you to summon gods with a bunch of, you know, complicating factors to spice that up a little bit. But it's fun. I'm putting a lot into it, but I just every once in a while I'll get enthused about that project and kind of play test it with friends or something, and then like revise the rules and try to revise the board and all that. But I don't know. I'm rediscovering a love of board games, I guess you could say. And I've been playing this one called Wingspan lately. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
It's very cool. It was created by what I gather are some like bird watching enthusiasts. And so it's kind of like a typical resource building game, except for like it's in the language of birding. So like, you know, you put a bird on the board and that bird might give you the ability to, you know, lay eggs better or collect worms better, and those things will allow you to, you know, play more birds. And my wife and I have been playing it like nonstop. It's an excellent, excellent game.
Well, I guess the ultimate war game is having hummingbirds in your backyard, but there was a guy. There's a guy who owns a coin store in Concord, and he also sells board games. And he told me He got very little money out of the coin stuff, and it was all the board games were much better for making money because the markups were so much higher than, because everyone knows what a Pan American silver round is worth, you know, or everyone in the Liberty community knows, you know, that it's worth, you know, whatever an ounce of silver is worth, and they can just check Kitco for the price. But with these games, you know, you can mark them up, and no one really seems to know or care. And so if you think about it, so many games on, if you use Steam to try to get a computer game, you can easily get computer games for 25 cents. So that must be sucking some of the money out of that industry too. So.
Yeah, I think so, and I feel like board games are sort of trying to figure out ways to wrangle a little more money out of the experience. Like Monopoly, you spend $15 on it once, and then you're done, right? You never have to spend another dollar on Monopoly, and you can play it for 1,000 hours. But they've come out with these like legacy games, which the idea is as you play, the board game changes. So, like, you know, it might include, like, stickers. And so if this was in a your tactic world, which I'm not familiar with that game, but, you know, say you play and throughout the course of the game you set off some, you know, let's say, like, a nuclear bomb. And that might permanently destroy a territory on the board that you would signify with, like, stickers. And the surrounding territories might have some sort of like troop movement penalty because they're irradiated or something like that. So you indicate that with stickers. And then the next time you play, you know, you finish that game, you put it away. The next time you bring it out, those conditions are still in effect. So it's like the board game changes over time and the rules change over time. And you're meant to play it through like a limited number of times and then the game is done. So I might pay, you know, $50, $60 for a legacy game, play it for 20 hours, and then I throw it away at the end. And I have to spend another $60.
Yeah, that sounds like a racket.
Yeah. My wife used to work in a bank. She used to set aside all the coins that caught her eye, you know? What you said, like, ever since the internet, people know the exact value of the that is value. And that really squeezes the
you're breaking up. I'm gonna try moving my phone, see if it makes a difference. Probably doesn't. Alright, you still there?
Can you hear me? I can hear you clear as a. Are you still having a hard time hearing me?
Yes.
I'm going to call you right back. Is that okay? Can you keep your equipment running?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. All right, call me right back.
This is a call from Matt interviewing me on March 9th. He's a reporter in Maine. And I'm waiting for him to call me back after we had some problems with reception. Anyway, this will be sort of an NH exit related discussion. Sort of a poor man's podcast, I guess. I just, when a reporter talks to me or interviews me, I usually record it and I can put it on my channel. I get a free video out of it, or a free podcast, or whatever you want to call it. It's also not too bad if
Oh, here he goes. Let's, here comes the call. I have my audio off. Let's see here. Here we go. I've got him here, but I got to get him on speakerphone. Let's see. Can't hear you yet, Matt. I've got to put you on speakerphone. Let's see. Okay, now I'm recording again. Can you hear me, Matt?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Is this any better?
For the moment.
yeah, geez. Well, you know, I suppose, if our connection's a little shaky, maybe I ought to just stop you in a chatterbox and let you do the talking so I can take notes and stuff. Tell me about some of the things that we mentioned by email, like what some of these arguments for secession.
Okay, so yeah, you had interviewed me a week or two ago about I run nhexit.com, and you were asking me, you know, why I'm a secessionist, we'd swapped some email after that conversation, and I tried to write down all the things that I didn't think we had covered in the last discussion that were important, and I think, you know, everything I could think of off the top of my head, I over a 2 or 3 day period, I did write down and send to you, which probably wasn't all that much. I'm sorry, I've managed to forget what your question was.
Well, I guess I was just kind of asking you to rehash that email. I do have the email, but sometimes it's a little better to hear it out of your mouth instead of out of your fingers.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have it all right in front of me, but I remember one thing that I was mentioning was just that I don't think we really got very much into the sort of the grievances that lead someone like me to favor New Hampshire being independent from the Union. And I actually don't have the best list in my head. I referred you to nhindependence.org, which kind of does a better job of condensing them. For me, it's, you know, it's the fear we have to live under in the United States. You know, the fear that the IRS will come for you, or, you know, for some minor mistake that they think is a big deal, or that the SWAT team will come through your front door. You know, the feds don't do that super often in New Hampshire. But like I said, I was mentioning it to you in the last discussion. It did happen to that guy who was at the Bundy Ranch, and he came back to New Hampshire. He lives here, and they sent a SWAT team through his door for being involved in the Bundy Ranch standoff, sort of, very minor way. But ultimately it comes down to the fact that there's this list. It's over 200,000 pages long of things you're not allowed to do, and it's called federal law, right? And maybe once you add the code into it, I don't know, it's somewhere between 200,000 and 2 million pages long. Actually, they've lost track of how long it is, but that's how much law we have. They say it's a nation of law. It sure is, but no one knows what the law is because there's so many laws. So it just there's too many forbidden acts, too many things are forbidden now, and if we're independent, then that goes away in a stroke, at least in theory.
And you're more comfortable with a state government because you feel like you have a little more influence there. Is that right? A little more ability to steer the ship?
There is more. Just for example, it's normal when there's a state house hearing that anyone who wants to can go testify, right? You don't have to be on a list to testify. They take testimony from whoever walks into the room, right? So, and imagine how difficult it would be for you to testify in front of Congress.
Well,
If something's wrong, something's too big.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, too, like the last time we were talking about it, and I feel like one of the major things that makes me land in a different spot than you is that I feel like corporations are the bigger concern. Well, like they have more capability to get out of control and rule my life than the. And I see the that I at least have, you know, I feel like I'm more represented in government than I am in a corporation, and therefore the government is perhaps the less bad bully.
Well, we can hope, at least in theory, that it would be that way at the state level, or that it is that way at the state level. And I think if you pit the state of New Hampshire up against Google, then yeah, the state of New Hampshire is a little bit less evil than Google. you got a point there. But that is certainly not the case with the Washington government, which is sufficiently bad that it does things that the Kaiser didn't even dream of doing in World War I. For example, torture.
Give me
torture, yeah. Torture, and torture.
Yeah.
Churchill said that the German government did not use torture in World War I. That's more than you can say for the current Fed government.
You're a big Churchill fan, huh?
Pardon?
You're a big Churchill fan.
Not exactly. It's complicated. It's more like he's my granddad, even though he's not. It's just kind of like it's when you have a when someone is brilliant and classy in a lot of ways, you know, and funny. They're hard to ignore. He did a lot of, you know, bad stuff, and you know, I think of a lot of conflicts where I'm on the side of his enemies, but you still can't help but love the man.
One other thing that I was thinking that I wanted to kind of ask you, I still have you on the line, right?
Still what?
Dave? Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I still have you on the line.
Okay.
Sounds like the connection is still not great.
Okay.
But when I talk to my liberal and progressive friends, when they hear about the Free State Project or local libertarians, they're really afraid. You know, they really see you guys as kind of like synonymous with the Capitol insurrectionists, that you are guys out there with guns, that some of you are, that they kind of conflate you with white supremacists. And they think that, you know, your goal is to kind of have this, you know, macho place where people are running around with guns, and if you don't have a gun, you're going to lose out. So what would you say to those people who, and these are like, you know, that's really what they think. They're really legitimately afraid of what that, of the libertarian community. What would you say to them?
Well, they're describing Venezuela, an authoritarian socialist state. That's what it's like in Venezuela.
That's not very reassuring. If I say, well, they think you're a scary guy, and you say, well, there's this other scary guy. what can you say about you and about I guess character of the Free Staters, or like how do you differ from that fear?
Well, again, just compare New Hampshire to Venezuela, right? And New Hampshire has gun freedom, plenty of gun freedom, and very little gun violence. Venezuela has no gun freedom and endless gun violence. So I think, you know, we have to look at how things actually look in the real world when you're in a place where your ideology has some sway. The libertarian ideology has the most sway in New Hampshire of any place on Earth, and look how peaceful it is. And look how tolerant it is, too. And this was where Ona Judge Staines fled from George Washington to get away from his enslavement of her, right? And this is one of the earliest really popular and famous cases of escaped slaves. This was where she wanted to be, right? And that I think, you know, since then it's gotten better in terms of the level of tolerance in New Hampshire.
And in turn, how do you see the kind of like progressive role people around here? Did you feel like, geez, if they got their way, we would turn into a Venezuela?
If who got whose way?
If they're kind of like very liberal, very progressive folks who might be considered like, you know, the political opposites of libertarians. You know, how do you view...
You broke up on me again, but I'm going to assume that you were asking what would happen if progressives took charge in New Hampshire.
Well, just like how do you view the progressives? You know, like if they took charge of New Hampshire, you know, like what are your fears or what's your idea of what that would look like?
Well, it would depend. I mean, if you're talking about, if by progressive you mean a Norwegian-style government or a Swedish style of government, that in some ways that would be an improvement over what we have now. But if you're talking, again, like Venezuelan socialism or Chinese-style socialism, then, of course, I think we can all agree that would be really bad. And again, I'm sort of thinking, I'm adding the feds into this mix here. If we were just replaced, like if immediately the situation in New Hampshire was suddenly identical to the situation in Sweden politically, we would all have more freedom. And that's what a lot of progressives say they want. So, you know, in theory, that's not something to be angry about. The problem is that in a lot of cases, progressivism is not like Sweden. It's something else. It's just a bunch of new rules and a bunch of bans on more things, and that's when it's a problem. You broke up again on me there, Matt, and I didn't understand.
sorry. What are libertarians like as people? You know, are there any general statements you can make about what sort of people libertarianism attracts?
It seems to be more male and a high percentage of gay folks.
What do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I think, you know, every minority sort of benefits from a free society, if you can attain a free society. So you would think it would attract every minority, but it seems like the minority that it attracts most commonly would be gay folks, and not ethnic minorities as much. I wish that we had more ethnic minorities in the movement, but we're gonna get what we get. We put out our shingle, and whoever shows up shows up. Usually. But, you know, I guess it's sort of, I mean, it tends to be men who are drawn towards pioneering type efforts. And that maybe that explains it. Maybe men are more targeted these days by the political system than women are. Maybe that also drives more of them into libertarianism.
And how would you characterize the progressive? Do you perceive a type of person that's attracted to the opposite ideal?
I'm not sure. I really don't know. I don't think I have an answer for you.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's see, you would favor New Hampshire seceding if and only if it got a majority. Your evidence is.
Can you repeat, Matt?
I'm sorry. You would only support secession if a majority of New Hampshire.
Oh yeah, I think I got you there. I would vote in favor of secession regardless of what the percentages were, I think, you know, whether I thought it was popular or not. But I don't think New Hampshire should secede from the Union if a majority of New Hampshireites wanted to stay in the Union, obviously.
A majority if some of these problems, like runaway inflation, manifest. Is that kind of like the scenario where you thought that could become a reality?
Yeah, that's what's happened in other places. That's tended to increase support for independence where you have economic problems associated with the central government.
That makes sense.
And something I forgot to mention, kind of going backwards when we were talking about how badly the state government behaves compared to how badly the feds behave. There was one instance where I did exactly the same thing to both governments and was able to observe the different results. So I used to do this thing I called silent protests. And I would just show up by myself. This was before YouTube, before YouTube was a thing, or at least before I had a good camera. And I went into an IRS office and just held a sign. I don't remember what it said. It was something like, I can't remember, but it was, you know, it was pretty mild. I handed out flyers to the people that worked there until they told me to leave. Didn't say anything to them. And the flyer, you know, basically just urged them to stop collecting taxes, basically. And then I went to the state tax office, and I protested about some minor thing they had done. And same process, just hold a sign, hand out some flyers, don't answer any questions. The flyer should answer the question. Okay, so the IRS had me arrested, and the state tax office, the commissioner came out, shook my hand, and answered all the questions that were in my flyer, and thanked me for being there. So and the IRS thing, it was not an immediate arrest. They didn't arrest me on the scene. They sent Homeland Security after me 3 weeks later. They were not initially trying to arrest me. They just wanted to issue a fine. It was called a distribution of handbills fine. And so this was in court for about 6 months, and I kept refusing to pay it, and eventually they threw me in jail for 4 days for contempt.
Wow.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was in 2006.
And after 4 days in jail, you were allowed to leave without paying the fine?
Correct.
Yeah. Nice. Let's see. I was kind of curious.
I'm sorry. I should say the protest was in 2006, and the jail term was in 2007. So if that makes sense.
As you know, I have this book about the Grafton Freetown Project. If you could say one thing to my readers about that project, what would you say?
Well, the Grafton Freetown Project is not the Free State Project. It seems to have succeeded in selecting New Hampshire's freest town. I would say that's the main thing. Their data has proven to be fairly accurate. And what's the other thing that's worth knowing about them? I'd say Grafton is basically roughly the freest town in New Hampshire. But it doesn't have... You know, it still has five layers of government above it, just like every place in America, right? So it's governed pretty much the same way that the rest of the country is. I would estimate that a total of 40, well... It's hard to count because the Freetown Project never really had members as far as I know, and it didn't really seem to be active past 2007 to my knowledge, but maybe it was, maybe it still is for all I know. So if you don't like what they're doing, if you don't like living with a slightly smaller government that has some activists questioning it, then you don't have to move to Grafton.
Right. What is it about Grafton that makes it a more free place than otherwise comparable towns?
Well, one of the best things it has going for it is that it's in New Hampshire, which means that the state government's constitutional restrictions come into effect. New Hampshire's freedom, I think, is largely systemic rather than based on, well, it's heavily systemic. It's also geographical, I guess. But the Constitution of New Hampshire is pretty well written compared to most constitutions in terms of preserving a balance of power, checks and balances, individual freedom. And so Grafton falling under that, a lot of things get better from how it would be in Massachusetts or Texas. But there are probably also geographical factors in Grafton, it's like the low population, density, and just the people that already live there. You know, a lot of times when you hear about, I can't believe, a Grafton person did that. You know, if somebody says something like that, they can't believe Grafton, has this or doesn't have that. Well, that's the result of the people who already live there, like John Baviars and other folks who were libertarian, but they were heavily involved in the government, and they tried to exert a restraining influence over it over the years. And all that actually happened before the Freetown Project, so it was already New Hampshire's freest town. For example, as you know, there's no, well, last I checked, last I knew, there was no zoning in Grafton.
Yeah, I think so. How do people in the libertarian community look at John Baviars now?
Well, I guess people have different opinions about him. I consider him a friend. One time this was a fun experience because I lived in Grafton for 9 months back in 2009, and we had this incident where they were gonna have like a congressional thing at Grafton Town Hall. Some sort of congressional-related event, and it was kind of really just a routine thing where congressional staffers were going to answer questions from or something or help, process people's paperwork for stuff. And I think people thought it was going to be more of a town hall meeting or something like that. So, there were probably 60 or 70 people from the area who showed up for this meeting. And they weren't really ready for us, right? And so it resulted in, I shot some video there, and that got on CNN. I don't know why it was considered all such a big deal, but there was tension over whether we were going to be allowed into the building and stuff like that. So after that incident, John was there, and I'd interviewed him there. And later that day, I was running back and forth, hauling wood from one part of the property to another, and Baviars and I just ran together to and from the house, recounting what we had seen at that incident. So it was just fun to have conversation about what we'd experienced that day while also running back and forth and moving wood around. But I've always considered him really supportive of whatever I do, and I don't pay super close attention to what he's doing. But I'm glad he's there.
Yeah. I remembered one of the things that I talk about in my book is that a campfire incident, which I know was kind of like a flashpoint for some people with him. Many people consider his putting out a campfire to be a statist act. But when I talk to him about it, he says, well, if you think I'm statist, look at the guy who's coming behind. he fellas made a good judgment call in the moment, and you know, that his overall philosophy and work, you know, kind of like speaks for itself as far as his libertarian authenticity.
Yeah, I mean, it's like people get really upset about things that happen close to them that are really kind of minor, but they don't get upset about the thing that happened 100 miles away that's really major. And it's the same way, I guess it's the same way with, like, progressives who are worried about the Free Staters. If the Free Staters are, maybe they're geographically close to a progressive that lives in New Hampshire, and so they worry about them, but they may not worry so much about the fact that the government is torturing people with their money, right? Because it's happening so far away. They may not like the fact, you know, there's a Free Stater in their town and he makes the meetings go on longer than he, you know, they would have otherwise, or they're annoying, or they carry a sign that someone disagrees with. People will lose their minds over that, but you know, they don't lose their minds over the fact that a third of their income is getting taken away from them every year, and that, you know, the government has dropped, you know, they dropped bombs on 7 different countries in the first 2 years of Obama's administration, right? They don't seem to care about that too much. So why is that?
Yeah, and even if there were issues that they did align with or hold near heart, I think you're right.
I'm sorry, you broke up again.
Proud of us, other than I was just kind of expressing general agreement with that point that we done a good job of getting something the right weight different. Yeah, you know, like we're bad at evaluating the importance of things.
Maybe some people are, some people are not. Yeah, sometimes. But can I get a sec for a bio break here, and then maybe give you a ring back? Can you hear me?
This system doesn't take incoming calls.
Okay, just try calling me again in about 10 minutes, if you would.
LRN programs is very nice. They're so great, I like them twice. Some people don't take LRN's advice, but they're softer than Alex Jones and louder than mice. LRN.FM. Feds don't want you to hear them.